This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio here on NPR One.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard.
Kathy Person, Director of Education, Kelsey Museum of Archaeology, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor.
Welcome.
What a pleasure to be here. It's so cool coming in this building. There is living history going back to Pompeii and way before. I love it. Tell us about some of the highlights, some of the cool things that you're most proud of.
One of the things that we are most proud of here would be our collection excavated from the site of Caranus, which is in northern Egypt. The University of Michigan sponsored excavations there from 1924 to 1935, and we were given permission to bring back a large amount of material. It actually forms almost half of our collection here, which is really great for an archaeology museum because really, one of the important pieces of information to get from an archaeological object is the context. And since we were the ones that excavated it, we do have that context, and we can understand these things even better because of that. And I think from Caranus, one of my favorite things on display would be the sandals that we have. So they look like flip-flops that you would buy at, you know, a convenience store, a good drugstore today, and they are all broken in exactly the same spot.
You can almost hear that person 2,000 years ago saying the same swear word when their flip-flop breaks.
When your flip-flop breaks, yeah, exactly. And the ones we have, of course, are all broken because they were from people threw them out to get a new pair.
And that speaks to what most closely touches my heart coming here. And it truly is like time travel. Mm-hmm. There's so many objects and things, jewelry, for example, mm-hmm. that, I mean, I don't even know if they make this stuff this sophisticated today.
There are some truly beautiful pieces of jewelry here and other wonderful objects. Another aspect of our collections that we're really proud of is our glass collection. So we have quite a lot of full glass vessels that we also were excavated from Caranus, and we're really proud of these. Most places you go to a museum, and if you see Roman period glass, it has been reconstructed from broken pieces. But
these are intact.
They're all intact.
How did they survive? They got buried in soft material?
They were buried in sand, in sandstorms that happened across the site. And over time, they buried the materials that were at the site and just waiting for us to find them, I guess.
I think the other thing is maybe it's just you're blessed to have such a cool collection, but the sophistication of this ancient artwork, of the sculptures, of the art, the literal art that you've been able to retain, is like traveling back in time and at the same time making us understand how they were in their context as contemporary as we are.
Absolutely. And I think the level of detail that we can see on these things, I think we've probably forgotten more technological advances that they had than we retained for sure.
Well, let's reel back in time for a moment in Kathy Person's life. And you have a PhD in archaeology, but it didn't start out that way. You weren't a baby PhD. So what was a game changer for you? How did you decide on this path?
When I was a small child, my mom gave me a book of Greek myth, and I loved it and was fascinated with these people and wanted to know more about who created these stories. So in high school, I studied Latin and fell in love with Roman culture and Roman literature and was going to be a classicist. And then I got to college and was not so good with the languages, but I was really interested in learning more about the history and the stuff, the material that people were leaving behind and what that stuff can tell us. You can read an object just like you can read a book. You can gain so much information from them. And that idea really grabbed me. And so when I decided I wanted to go to grad school, I wanted to study the material culture. I wanted to study ancient trash.
There you go. And so your doctoral dissertation was?
I looked at elements of domestic religion in houses in Roman period Greece. So I wanted to see how people living during the Roman period, during the second century CE, in their houses, how they were worshiping at home. Did it look, were they Roman gods? Were they Greek gods? Were they something else? And what that may tell us about the population of people living in cities in Greece in the Roman period.
any number one takeaway, any most touching, epiphanous thing that you learned or saw?
For doing my dissertation research?
Well, yeah, or? Just even, you know, digging into the domestic life religion at that time.
Well, I think all the concerns are the same as we have today. So you want to make sure that your family is healthy, that you have food, that no one's messing with your stuff, that, you know, all those things are still, you know, that you want to make sure that that everybody's safe and happy and healthy. And I think it's something we all concerned with today.
You have a lot of calligraphy here. You have cuneiform writings and whatnot. So in some ways, they're talking to you through time.
I guess so. In some ways, yeah, we can see what they had to say and what they have to tell us. What was important enough to warrant being documented in writing? Of course, writing is something that was reserved for those with an education, usually the elite. So it needed to be worth putting down to be written, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. What would be the two or three things, if we only had a half hour or an hour here, that you would definitely make somebody see? And for me, it would be the Pompeii room.
Yes, I would highly recommend checking out the Villa of the Mystery Room on our second floor. It is stunning, and for those who are interested in sort of experiencing what it would be to walk into an ancient building, this room will give you that feel. This room is a reconstruction. It's a watercolor reconstruction of a room that you can visit in Pompeii today. It's at a 5-6 scale, and it probably was a dining room, and it's got this beautiful reproduction of a fresco painting that you would see and experience today.
It's like 360 surround.
It's all around you. Yeah, it is definitely. You can imagine yourself going to a dinner party in this space, and what do you think it would have felt like to have sort of twinkly lamp light, not these electric lights, but sort of dimmer lamp light, and, you know, maybe a glass of wine and a full belly. And what do you think this space, how would you feel in this space after that experience?
And again, there's that time travel element, the faces of the women, very contemporary.
Yes, absolutely. One of the women actually stares right at you, which can be a little intimidating too. Yeah. For sure.
A couple thousand years?
Yeah, so that would have been, I believe, the first century BCE would have been when that was created. And then I think another thing, if you had a half hour here, so definitely see that room, and definitely check out the coffin of Jehudimos, our priest of Horus. It is a stunning coffin from Egypt, filled with different passages from what we call the Book of the Dead, which is a collection of spells and essentially is your cheat sheet for the afterlife if you're wealthy enough to be able to afford it. And I would say also don't miss our galleries pertaining to Kronos, because the Kronos material is really so relatable. I mean, shoes and dishes and doors and things like that. So
yeah, the doors, so time warp.
I mean, yeah. They look like, one of them looks like a door that would be in a house today, for sure.
And that's what, 1,000-year-old door?
2,000.
Excuse me. Yeah. Minor details.
Yeah. So, I mean, certainly I would check those things out.
Okay, one more before we go.
Sure.
A must do when you're here.
So the other thing I recommend is throughout our galleries, we have these little drawers, and all of the drawers pull out, and they have lots more to discover. So you can find things in the cases, but then you can also have this experience of uncovering something by pulling out these drawers. And they contain things like ancient toys, examples of pottery, even some of the archival material from the excavations that we sponsored in the 20s and 30s. So you can learn more about the process of archaeology and not just the archaeological materials and the ancient cultures.
The process of archaeology and an archaeological dig is very different today than it was in the 1920s. Tell us about how it has evolved and changed.
In the 20s, actually, Francis Kelsey was one of the people pushing for a more scientific approach to excavation. He followed in the practices of Sir Flinders Petrie, who was interested in sort of the stratigraphy, what I talked about at the beginning of the tour, understanding that material culture of one time period will be similar, and then when you see a change in the material culture, something new, some new event has occurred, and understanding that concept concept, understanding recording that in the different layers of an excavation, and also recording the context, the fine spots, where exactly that object was found in relationship to other objects and the building or other structure that it's around, that's around it. So understanding the context and recording that data. And that now is what we are interested in, is recording that data, that information. And, I mean, in addition, we try to do as little... Archaeology is an unrepeatable experiment, so once you've excavated, you can never re-excavate that material. That information is completely lost and destroyed. So we are, I think we are much more mindful now than we were at the turn of the last century.
That explains ground-penetrating radar, yes, right?
Using non-invasive techniques like ground-penetrating radar, doing things like survey archaeology, which is basically walking a field and making observations without actually digging in the dirt to be able to understand where things are, where people may have been carrying out activities of some sort based on just what you see on the surface.
Interesting. Have you been on a dig?
I have been on several digs while I was in graduate school. I worked in Italy, Greece, and Turkey.
So your favorite, most memorable?
Well, most memorable would be working in the Roman Forum during the height of tourist season. But I think my favorite, and that was a great excavation, but I think my favorite was working in Turkey at the site of Tarsus. That was a really fabulous excavation and a really exciting one to be on, for sure.
And a memorable moment of finding something in the dig?
So at that excavation at Tarsus, I was digging, my trench was a bit muddled. The earth had been turned a few times, so it was kind of like where people had dumped excess dirt for a while. So I was trying to make sense of this, and all of a sudden I came across an Akkadian cylinder seal that had been deposited there, which is not something you find in southern Turkey. The Akkadian region would have been in Mesopotamia, so this cylinder seal traveled to southern Turkey somehow, and it was just... an amazing moment to find this.
I love it. The caravan stopped.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, I hate to do it, but it means I have to come back.
Absolutely.
So, Kathy Person, Director of Education, Kelsey Museum of Archaeology, University of Michigan, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
To learn more about Kelsey, website?
Yes, so you can go to our website. It is at umich.edu/Kelsey.
And one more before we go. How does somebody find you on campus? Simple directions?
Simple directions. So we are located, our main gallery entrance is on Maynard Street. Google Maps will take you to our State Street entrance. We are across the street from the Art Museum, the building that looks like it belongs at Hogwarts.
I love it. Perfect. Kathy Person, thanks again. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the University of Michigan campus, Kelsey Museum. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and Iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes, and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolfe, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.